So my first involvement with the centre, and above all with some of the people who had connections with the centre, arose from being involved in the health service in the 1980s, and first on the what was then Paddington and North Kensington Community Health Council, and then a member of the Paddington and North Kensington Health Authority in the late 1980s. And some of the political battles that were going on there around provision of healthcare, particularly there was the closure of the Peter Pan Children's Ward in St Charles Hospital, involved working with some of the organisers of the children's services in North Kensington. And it was through that I got to know Susie, the late Susie Parsons, a dearly beloved Susie Parsons, who was involved in Maxilla and who had other connections with Maxilla. And it was at that stage that I first became aware of Maxilla as one of the prototype children's providers, as sort of an integrated day nursery and nursery school, which was very, very unusual. And the kind of extraordinary reputation that Maxilla had as I later learned, nationally, but certainly locally, and very much in the context of the North Kensington of the time, that was in the 1980s, but the North Kensington of the mid and later part of the last century, being an extraordinarily deprived community, as anybody who's ever read Alan Johnson's autobiography will know, and in many ways, of course, it still is, which we can come on to. But the projects such as Maxilla, and there were a couple of others, the Adventure Playground, the Venture Centre, were kind of symbols of community activity in an area of extremely high deprivation and with a very high level of community involvement and voluntary sector involvement, which again, you know, is not every day in the context of deprived communities. So then, after that, sort of knowledge, not more, knowledge more than involvement, I then started to become actively involved and connected with Maxilla in the mid-1990s. I was selected as the parliamentary candidate for the Regent's Park and Kensington North parliamentary seat, having been a councillor in the Queen's Park ward, which borders on North Kensington. But that took me into being involved as a potential representative in North Kensington for the first time. And so I remember clearly the first time I went into Maxilla in that incarnation. I had been in there before, but was when the nursery voucher scheme was introduced. And the then Conservative government, one of the proposals that they introduced in 1996, I think it came into force, was the nursery voucher scheme. It didn't last very long. It was replaced by the incoming Labour government. But Judy and the Maxilla team were very, very concerned about what that meant for services such as Maxilla's, and that very much shaped by the fact that a good early years environment was important to see it as a care and learning environment, and not simply as a support for working parents environment that could be traded through vouchers in a way that probably didn't recognise the kind of multi-layered quality of the service that they were trying to provide. So they were very, very, very concerned about it and very much wanted to know if there was a change of government that the voucher scheme would be replaced, which it was. So I got involved with them and worked quite closely with them on some of the arguments around the scheme and why the voucher scheme would not work. And they were very much at the kind of cutting edge of describing why it didn't work. So that was 1995. So I've subsequently have known Judy Wilcox fairly well over those years. And others in Maxilla. So then that scheme was replaced, and by the end of the 1990s, we were starting to get into the formation of Sure Start. And I was fortunately got to know Naomi Eisenstadt quite well in all of that. And Naomi, who I don't know if you're interviewing her for your project, but Naomi always regarded Maxilla as being one of the models that she had in her mind for the whole Sure Start programme, which was always lovely. So we brought Harriet Harman to Maxilla And we did visit. We used to visit Maxilla as part of the, when ministers want to do visits, and obviously London is often easier than others. But Maxilla was where we would come to say, actually, Maxilla is what we're talking about. It's, it certainly provides a nursery to support working parents that you can but the point of it is to integrate child care as support for working parents with an early learning environment, and to do so, in an exceptional high quality and with a very good facility. Particularly given its very challenging urban environment. And the other thing that's always been extraordinary about Maxilla, a tiny bit to do with where it's located, but only a tiny bit, is that it also managed to be something of a comprehensive model. It actually did manage to be both hugely multi-ethnic, but also a kind of real mix. So you would have the children there of parents who were homeless, who had been placed in temporary accommodation. In some cases, on the edge of London, who would keep their children in Maxilla because it was so important to them. You'd have homelessness, you'd have extraordinary deprivation, you'd have the children of the Moroccan community and the Bangladeshi community, the Somali community, but also some very middle-class parents from the more expensive private parts of, going down towards Notting Hill, which I've always thought was incredibly important. I mean, it's incredibly important in schools, but actually in an early years environment, it's incredibly important in all sorts of ways. Just out of interest, the fact that we have Dorothy Gardner and Mary Patterson nurseries here as nursery schools, who've always managed to achieve the same thing in, again, what's a very deprived environment. So that was brilliant. And then, of course, come 2003, we had the... We had the great crisis of the attempt to restructure Maxilla to have basically they felt that the structure was so in common with this whole battle we're having around nursery schools. They didn't want a dedicated head teacher. And that the costs of this were too high, and they wanted to, in the context of the development of the children of the network of children's centres as it rolled out in the middle of the last decade, to cut the overhead costs, and that was the big battle then was about the head teacher, and because Maxilla had been, I think, able to do two things, being able to win the hearts of a very deprived community and involve them, which is not everybody's experience, but that brought a hugely powerful campaign together. But also because they did cross the divide, and all the experience teaches us that that's the battles you win are not just the battles where you win on the grounds of deprivation. You have to win because you've got a breadth of support, and it was, but also they had managed to build some cross-party political alliances, which was essential, because if it had just been kind of the Labour MP fighting the battle, it wouldn't you wouldn't they wouldn't have won. I mean, Kensington would have, I think they probably, but they didn't want the publicity. They're always very shy of publicity. But I remember we ended up going to the school organising committee in public hearing, which was the first time I'd ever done that. I was one of the people who spoke at the committee, and we had 150 people at the SOC meeting. It was unheard of, absolutely unheard of, and it was high drama, as all these different people, including Conservative councillors, Conservative councillors and parents and parents from all kinds of different communities, just making these incredibly powerful arguments in favour of this rare combination of care and education, and the preservation of the outdoor space, which was another huge battle in 2003. That was part of the redevelopment plans under the Westway, which was a whole separate strand about Westway Development Trust, which gave us endless headaches. But the redevelopment plan that also incorporated the reduction of the sort of management costs via the shared head teacher, also involved losing most of their garden, and the garden was just stunning. as Mary Patterson's is in Queen's Park. And given that 85% at least of all the residents in North Kensington don't have gardens, the preservation of this open space was incredibly important to us. I suspect that in the context of that particular decision, the garden might have ended up as being more important than their teacher. We won that battle. And not long after that, Regent's Park and Kensington North was abolished as a constituency, and you know, I kind of lost that as my area. No, I wasn't surprised, because it was clearly what the intention was, in a slightly different manifestation for slightly different reasons in 2003. There's clearly been a more than decade long desire to the site itself has been one issue, but then the nature of the combined facility has been another, and the costs attached to it. It's clearly been in people's crosshairs for a very, very long time. And, you know, and I knew you could see which way it was going. And of course, it's that part, in a sense, that is now slightly rolled into this wider problem that the children's centres themselves are you know, in full retreat, and we are losing children's centres, and the model has moved away from thinking of children's centres as being a community resource that with a very strong outreach function that drew children in and parents in order to develop opportunity and enrichment, that in some cases would have childcare attached, and in a few cases nurseries, but usually not. The ones that did were precious and fortunate, but seeing a lowest common denominator moving across all of those, so that many of those combined facilities are being lost. Pressure is on nurseries, on freestanding nurseries, despite their, in my view, outstanding quality and record of achievement. But the community dimension is also lost. It's lost. It's regarded as, you know, it's too nebulous and unmeasurable, and therefore that's what's going. So the whole direction of travel is around. Childcare for working parents, so to say, is a good thing, but should only be seen as one of a two or three, at the very least, equally important objectives. The freestanding institutions, whether they're nursery schools or integrated centres, are, there was something kind of absolutely precious about them. I mean, I feel in so many, there's so many ways in community, well, yeah, it could be, I mean, obviously I think of it from the perspective of an inner city community with all of the challenges. So you've got, in an area like this, hyper diversity, like, you know, 100 languages spoken in school. So you need some glue. You need some glue to make that work. Hyper diversity, very high physical mobility, people moving around a lot of homelessness, a lot of social challenge. Early years, reaching people through their parenting function and through the early years is, I would say, the single best thing that you can do. Schools and children's centres are the most valued institutions in society. People trust them in a way that they do not trust almost anything else. I was absolutely passionate, as I know Naomi Eisenstadt was, about the idea of the original Sure Start model morphing into children's centres as having a community dimension, an outreach dimension, you know, a drop-in dimension, but also either providing or being absolutely integral to the directing people into the early years, into early years, whether it's childcare or early education. And it's just gone. I would do surgeries, my surgeries there in these children's centres, because that was a really good way of reaching parents who may not have had the confidence to think, I'm going to ring up my MP and ask for help. So, you know, one of the things I do as often as I possibly can is go into a school, but I would go into the children's centres and I'd say, I'll do an advice surgery. Yes, the parents can come and see you about their housing problems. And the workers there would refer people. So you had a constant, you know, interaction with them over debt and housing and sometimes immigration and all sorts of different issues. That's all. It's all gone. It's all gone. It's absolutely heartbreaking. Mm. And for so many people, the physical space is so critically important. Now, I know, you know, the government will then say, well, we're rolling out the two-year-old offer. And, you know, let's be absolutely clear. I mean, I don't think it shouldn't be wholly negative. I mean, there have been continued advances in terms of the under fives offer, including under this government. I mean, they have expanded it. All kinds of issues around it, but broadly speaking, they have. And I think that's a good thing. But it's definitely, there's something lost as well as something gained, and we have lost a lot of the. We've lost a lot, if not virtually all of the community and the parental involvement. You can feel the difference in the community cohesion. It's as someone who, you know, we spend a lot of time out on the doorstep, and you knock on a lot of doors, you speak to people about politics, you are talking about elections and politics, but you pick up an awful lot of stuff. You have a feel for community. You have a feel for whether people feel engaged in the community or not, and whether there are institutions that glue people together. And there are one or two areas where, for different reasons, there are structures and still structures that exist. And the children's centres were part of that story. That they, you know, they gave people a sense of involvement and sharing, and, you know, they had a kind of, it was a multiplier role in terms of the child, the family, the child's future prospects, and therefore into schools and all the other things that early intervention adds up to, and the community. So, I mean, things change. Not everything should stay as it is, but I think if you get something right, you should be proud. I mean, that's what I remember saying this. I remember saying this absolutely. I think it was kind of my last, when I was speaking in 2003 at the school organising committee, my line on this was always, if you get something absolutely right and you can prove that you are absolutely right, as the right outcomes and people love it, you should be proud of it, instead of saying, hang on, that's, you know, above the average in terms of how much it costs, and therefore we should be levelling it out. Even if you can't replicate something everywhere, I don't think that means that if you have something excellent that you say that's too excellent. It was glorious. It was glorious. It was, you know, it was a very important piece of social history, and it was right. And it's heartbreaking, really.